The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from West Babylon, New York, this is Sports Talk 1240.
And what's up, everybody? Hour 2, Sports Talk 1240. I am your host, Andy Sukoff. And, of course, we got to give it up to the man, Brian Graves. And we are coming to you live from the Giants sideline in Sports Authority Field at Mile High in Denver, Colorado, where we're going in for the next play because there's no wide receivers left. Obviously, I'm just kidding about that. We are really here in Babylon, New York. Not in Denver, although another injury or two, and we're going to get some phone calls asking us if we know how to run a slant, run that seven-step curl route that Eli Manning likes so much. Man, what a rough month the New York Giants have had. And it's not going to get any better tonight, I don't think. Not against a tough Denver defense that doesn't stop. Before we get into everything that's going on here in New York, because we got the Jets, we got the Yankees, and of course the Giants tonight. The phone lines are open at 631-888-8811. I want to hear from you. I want to hear what you have to say about today's utterly despicable call in the end zone that basically turned the Jets-Patriots game into a complete debacle that the Jets had every reason to win, and then after that, it just all went down the toilet. But before we get to that, I need a minute to gloat a little bit about my alma mater, the Arizona State University. Last night on ESPN, Pac-12 After Dark. If you don't get a chance to watch it, you should, because the Pac-12 has some great college football out there, good teams, and a couple teams that have playoff aspirations this year. And the number 5 team in the nation, the University of Washington Huskies, come to Tempe to take on the 2-3 Arizona State Sun Devils. UW was an 18-point favorite, even in a place where they hadn't won since George Bush was in his first term as president back in 2001. Sun Devil Stadium is a house of horrors for the University of Washington. And they came in to play an ASU team that had lost by 10 to Stanford, gave up 30 points, and gave up 300 rushing yards to Bryce Love, which set a school record. 300 yards. It's not easy to run for 300 yards in a game. Some people don't even do that in a season. And the Sun Devil defense gave up that to one person. But I give a lot of props to ASU. They were up for the challenge and upset number 5 Washington 13-7 in a game that ended at 2:15 in the morning. I was sitting on the edge of my seat yesterday watching the end of that game, especially in the fourth quarter, when I'm watching Todd Graham calling a pass play on 3rd and 3 with 2 minutes to go, and Washington has no timeouts left. I don't know what you're thinking about there, Todd, but run the ball. You're going to kill time, and they had proven that they weren't stopping you. Run the ball. Luckily for you, you got that 30-yard fourth down conversion that salted the game away with 1:50 left, where I don't even know how Manny Wilkins put that ball into French Love's hands. That was one of the most insane passes I have seen in college football this year. I don't even know if he was throwing it to him, and it got there. So that was for me. I also have to remember where I was and what time it was, because I wanted to just jump and scream and just yell ASU at the top of my lungs for the next 15 minutes. Unfortunately, I couldn't do that. I basically had to just mouth the letters and basically just pace around the floor for 10 minutes, you know, pretending like I was at Sun Devil Stadium while the fans were rushing the field. For ASU, that snapped an 11-game streak of giving up 30 points a game to opponents. And they were shutting out UW until the fourth quarter. And that would have been their first shutout of an opponent since they shut out Washington 7 years ago. It's their first victory over a top five team since 1996, when they shut out number one Nebraska 19-0 on their way to a Rose Bowl. This is their second top 25 victory of the season. A few weeks ago, they took out Oregon. This week, they take out Washington. And nobody's going to confuse ASU with a playoff team. That I'm just going to be honest with you there. Nobody's going to confuse it. But getting a win like that is just, as an alum, just so much fun to sit there and watch everybody going nuts and seeing everybody storm the field and knowing that was something I never got to do. So I'm a little jealous of all the fans and the students that got to do that. And all I can say is enjoy the moment, because who knows when it's going to happen again. I hope it's the next time they play a top five opponent. I really do. But for that, big ups to Arizona State. And I'm just going to shout out a couple guys here: Manny Wilkins, N'Keal Harry, AJ Latu, and Christian Sam. You guys made Sun Devils proud last night and into this morning. All right, now that I got that out of the way, had to get the little bit of house cleaning out of the way, and a very satisfying house cleaning at that. That wasn't the only top 10 upset this week. There were three others. 40% of the top 10 went down in road games, and two of them in very stunning fashion. Actually, you know what? I'm going to take the back. All three of them in very stunning fashion. We're going to start at the bottom with this one, at number 10. Number 10, Auburn Tigers playing LSU. They were in Louisiana, where that's not an easy place to win, and it hasn't been for a decade. But LSU is not the LSU under Nick Saban. It's not the LSU under Les Miles. This is now Ed Orgeron's team. It's a little bit of a different identity. Auburn goes in there. They're up 20-0. 2 minutes into the second quarter. And if you're an Auburn fan, you're thinking, okay, we got this. We're going to cruise to a 40-0 win. And We'll move, because everybody else lost, we're going to move up into the top six, and it's going to be awesome, and we're just going to party on and bring on Alabama. LSU said, not today. They came back and erased a 20-0 deficit, and they outscored They outscored Auburn 27-3 for the last 43 minutes. 27-3. Let that sink in for a second. You're telling me that you can't hold a 20-point lead against an unranked team? I know the SEC is amazing, and there's a lot of good teams there. But you can't hold a 20-0 lead, and you think you should be ranked number 10? I don't think so. And that might be a product of the SEC getting very preferential treatment from the polls and the worldwide leader. They love those SEC teams. And nobody's going to deny that one. Going back west on Friday night, and there were two huge upsets on Friday night in terms of college football. First, we're going to go back out west. Going into Berkeley, number 8 Washington State, whose offense is one of the best in America. They go into California, and they get absolutely shellacked to the tune of 37-3 against a Cal team that had no business being in that game. Like they say, that movie, Any Given Sunday, I guess in this case, Any Given Friday, any team can come out and play their best game of the year against a team that's in the top 10. And that's going to be the signature win of the year for the Cal Golden Bears. Just like for Arizona State, that win against Washington is the signature win of the year. It doesn't matter what happens the rest of the way. They went out there and they beat a top 10 team. And they gave their home fans a treat. Because they took a team that, but, you know, with a few wins, especially if they were to beat Washington, they have just as good a shot at the playoffs as anybody else in the Pac-12. And they would have been a front runner for the Pac-12 title game. they can now kiss that goodbye. That's not happening anymore. Not after losing by 34 points to a Cal team that you had no business losing to. And then, of course, you got the big shocker. The two that went down. Number two, Clemson. On the road, right here in New York, they went up to Syracuse, into the Carrier Dome. And this is a Clemson team that won the national championship last year. Hadn't lost in almost a year. Their last loss was last season to Pittsburgh, which they lost at home on a last-minute field goal by Chris Blewett. And after that kind of put them into gear to win the national title. Maybe this year is going to be the same thing. But they go into Syracuse, and they get upset 27-24. And just like at Sun Devil Stadium last night, or technically this morning, the fans come rushing onto the field, and they earned it. How can you not storm the field to celebrate with your team and your friends when you're there and you know that your team took down the big, bad national champions? I never got to storm the court or storm the field after a big upset, because unfortunately when I was in college, my teams weren't all that good. They didn't get those chances to win those premier games. They usually got steamrolled. Or if they did, by some miracle, win one of those games, it was always on the road. So you couldn't have that moment to yourself where you could storm the court. Because if you tried to storm the court on the road, you're gonna get destroyed. And in the process, you're going to look like an idiot. So when you take down the top dogs on your home court or home field, and you get to have that moment, just take it all in. Take as many selfies as you want. Find the nearest player. Go get a picture with him. And put it on Facebook. Put it on Instagram and say, hey, I did this. And hope for the next one. Because it doesn't happen all that often. And when it does, you savor the moment. Of course, then you got your teams like your Alabamas. They just keep rolling right along. And nothing's gonna change that. Alabama's a great team. They just absolutely roll through everybody. And they're just gonna make their way through to the playoffs like they do every year. And this week, Penn State jumps up to number two with Clemson losing. They jump into the number two spot, and they got a good track to the playoffs right now. We got the phone lines open, 631-888-8811. And, oh, wow, something I did not expect to be saying right at this moment. At 9:15, the New York Giants are beating the Denver Broncos 10-0 as they get started in the second quarter. I did not see that coming. Not with Odell Beckham out, with Brandon Marshall out, with Sterling Shepard out, Olivier Vernon's not playing, Paul Perkins isn't playing. I don't even know who's on the roster that can catch passes at this point. Roger Lewis, I think, is the only one I know, and they signed Tavares King. These are people that, if you told this to somebody 6 weeks ago, they would have said, what happened? And who are these Giants? It's not something that you would expect to see. But, and apparently Eli Manning doesn't even need these guys, because he threw a touchdown pass to rookie tight end Evan Ingram, who I'm sure is playing some spots as a wide receiver in addition to playing his spot in the tight end role. You would have to believe that Coach Ben McAdoo is doing anything he can and just throwing anything at his big board of plays and hoping something sticks. Because his season is in dire straits, and his tenure as a Giants head coach is in dire straits. You can't expect to have a season like this and not expect some retribution for the job that you're doing. Granted, freaking injuries happen. Injuries happen to every team. No team goes through a season completely healthy because it's football. And just that's just the nature of sports in general. People sprain ankles. People break fingers and dislocate shoulders and a myriad other ailments that set the team back. But you have to just kind of go with the principle of next man up. And that's what the Giants are. They're being forced on their hands because their next man up is out for the season. And then their next man up is out tonight. And we don't know when he'll be back. So they're on, like, option 12. And people don't even know who they are. So this is a game that the Giants, just for their own sanity, they need to win. And will they win? I don't know. I would, conventional wisdom would say no. But that 10-0 score early in the second quarter says we don't really care about conventional wisdom. And apparently neither do the Giants, because they want to win this game just like every other team that plays football on Sundays wants to win. It's 9:18 here on the East Coast. Sunday Night Football is pretty much the only thing on right now, unless, of course, you're a baseball fan. And you got the NLCS going on right now, the Dodgers and the Cubs. I think that's the series everybody wanted to see in the National League. You have the defending World Series champions. You have what arguably the best team in baseball in the Los Angeles Dodgers. Those are the games that bring the ratings and get people talking about the sport. It's October. People want to see. They want to see the best teams in baseball duking it out. One prior to going back to Wrigley Field and getting those parts of the series out. On the other side, you got the guys here in New York. You got the Yankees. Everyone in New York wants to see the Yankees win, because that's not true. You have people who are Mets fans who, no matter what happens, don't like the Yankees and would rather see every single person on the Yankees get hit by a bus before they make it to the World Series. As a Yankee fan, I'm overjoyed that they're at this point, because if you had told me in April that this team was going to make it to the American League Championship Series, I'd have said you were out of your mind. I would have said to you, that team is too young, there's going to be incredible amounts of growing pains that they're not going to be ready for. And I thought they were going to be a 500 team this year. They proved me and pretty much everybody else wrong by winning 90 games. And then, on top of that, beating the Minnesota Twins in the wild card game, which, I guess in theory, shouldn't have been too unexpected because the Yankees own the Twins in the playoffs. I think the last time the Twins beat the Yankees in the playoffs, or at least won a game against the Yankees in the playoffs, was 2004. It seems like a long time ago when you really think about it. Then they have to go play the Cleveland Indians. Oh, they're not going to beat the Cleveland Indians. The Indians won on a 22-game win streak. Their pitching staff is way better. They can hit. The Yankees are going to get swept in three. And after that game on that Friday night when Joe Girardi should have challenged that hit-by-pitch, a lot of people thought they were. I was livid sitting there watching that game and seeing that play. I missed the play live. But then I saw the replay, and I was like, how are you not challenging that? Even if you're not sure, just go for it. You have nothing to lose. And the explanation that he got after the game from Joe Girardi was ludicrous. He got lucky that he got bailed out by Masahiro Tanaka pitching the game of his life in Game 3 on Sunday night, and then getting a great rebound performance from Luis Severino in Game 4. After what he did against Minnesota, you would have to believe that there was some nervousness in the Yankee dugout. What was Severino going to bring in this do-or-die game against an arguably better-hitting team and a team that can shut down opponents? Instead, what do you get? 7 innings, 9 strikeouts. Can't ask for much more from that. And then you get Game 5. A little bit of a back-and-forth affair. The Yankees jump out to a 3-0 lead because Didi Gregorius brings his big bat to Cleveland. Derek who? I'm kidding. No, nobody's going to replace Derek Jeter, but Didi Gregorius is doing a good job, at least in this playoffs, of making his name known as someone who can be trusted in the playoffs. Cleveland starts chipping away. They get those couple runs off of CeCe Sabathia in the 5th. And then in comes the Yankee bullpen. They get those outs. Nobody's scoring. Goes to the top of the 9th, and Brett Gardner has that incredibly, incredibly clutch at bat. 12-pitch at bat, which leads to a base hit, and ultimately gives the Yankees the insurance runs that they needed to win that game. Now, they're playing another 100-win team in Houston. And Houston has the same capabilities as the Cleveland Indians. Young team that can hit. Strong pitching. And they have that Dallas Keuchel, who the Yankees cannot figure out. And that didn't change. Friday night, game 1, Dallas Keuchel does Dallas Keuchel things and shuts the Yankees down. They had one chance in that game against him, and they screwed it up because they cannot. Their timely hitting is non-existent. And that is a huge, huge problem. When you have your Rookie of the Year and possibly your MVP in Aaron Judge striking out 17 times in 21 at-bats, it's unacceptable from a guy who's in your number 2 spot and who you're expecting to be hitting the ball at least once or twice a game and not swinging and missing at 800 pitches. And you have a catcher who hit 30 home runs and he's not hitting, and you have him in your number 4 spot. Of course you're not going to get any runs if they're leaving a small army on base and they're just not hitting. But I think what the biggest issue is here, aside from the lack of timely hitting for that matter, is the base running mistakes that the Yankees have made in each game. Both games have come down to base running moves that really dictated the flow of the game. Game 1, there's runners on first and second, 2 outs. Aaron Judge is up, and he finally throws a strikeout. He gets the hit. All right, great. The Yankees are going to tie the game. This is awesome. They're going to get that run in. Bird's coming around. He's going to score. Oh, yeah, that's right. Bird's not the quickest runner in the world, and Aaron Judge hit the ball 800 miles an hour. So Marvin Gonzalez gets to the ball in 2.1 seconds and throws an absolutely perfect throw from left field to the catcher, and Bird is out by a half a step. And some people are going to say, oh, the third base coach would have seen that and held him up. I would say it a little differently. When you're the runner on second base and it's a 3-2 count, how are you not off with the pitch? Or if you are off the pitch, how are you not getting a good jump? Because you know that Keuchel is not throwing over to second base to keep you there. He knows you're going to. So to get that huge lead, you should have been halfway to three-quarters down the line towards third base by the time Aaron Judge made contact with that ball. And if you were, you have no problem. You're scoring on that play. So I think there's culpability on both sides here between Bird and the third base coach. Because if you're telling me that that's strictly on the third base coach that should have known Greg Bird's speed, I agree that there's an issue there. But the situation dictated that Bird should have had a better awareness of his situation. Keuchel is not going to throw to second base. Get a huge lead. Get moving. You should have scored with no problem. And then yesterday afternoon, Brett Gardner hits one into the right field corner. And Gardner's got speed. So I'm sitting there thinking, okay, great, this is going to be a double. You know, two outs, runner on second, Judge coming up. He at least got a hit, so maybe that's going to carry over, and they'll rattle Verlander. At this point, it was a scoreless game. Gardner's rounding second, headed for third, and I'm looking, and they were showing Reddick getting to the ball as Gardner was close to second base. And all of a sudden, I remembered, oh, yeah, that's right. Reddick's got an amazing arm. Oh, that's not good. Gardner around seconds, heading for third. Reddick gets the ball in. He had a release time from ESPN, 0.7 seconds from the time he picked up the ball to the time he threw it, and threw an absolute laser to Carlos Correa. Carlos Correa holds the ball for a half a second, throws it to Bregman at third. Gardner slides, and he's out. How do you make the third out of third base? That's like the first rule of baseball. You don't make the first or third out at third base. You now took away your best chance of scoring a run. You had your best hitter all season up. I know he's been striking out, but that's the guy you want up with a runner on base and two outs. You want that guy up. Ugh. All right, from one bad decision to another, we're going to talk about the Jets and Patriots and what an awful, awful decision from the officials. We'll be right back. This is Sports Talk 1240.
Talk 1240 on Long Island's AM 1240. WGBB.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Want to advertise your business on Sports Talk 1240? Place an ad on sportstalk1240.com and run a radio commercial during the show every Sunday night here on AM 1240 WGBB. Our rates are very affordable. We'll even produce the radio commercial for you. Just head over to sportstalk1240.com and fill out the Contact Us form and let us start promoting your business today.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gustbuster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit Gustbuster.com and get your Gustbuster today.
Stay connected to Sports Talk 1240 by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
And we are back here for the last half hour, hour two. Sports Talk 1240, I am Andy Sugoff, and of course I gotta give it out to my man Brian Graves behind the glass, making it all happen. Alright. For all of you Jets fans out there, you might want to cover your ears. And I wish there was a better way to describe what happened today other than utterly deplorable. What transpired in today's game against the New England Patriots is an insult to officiating, and every single one of the ref crew today should be fired. But I'm not bitter. I'm not bitter at all. Right, Brian? I don't sound bitter, right? He's shaking his head no. Jets and New England were playing today at MetLife Stadium. Both teams are sitting at 3-2. And believe it or not, first place was on the line in the AFC East. If you, like I said with the Giants, that if you told me they were going to sit at 0-5 and be pretty much mired in football hell, I'd have said you were crazy. If you told me the Jets were playing for first place against New England Patriots, I said you were nuts. By the way, if you want to talk about this event, about this called like I am, 631-888-8811. The phone lines are open. I want to hear from you because me yelling about it and not really going to do all that much. The Jets started out like a good team. They jumped out to a 14-0 lead. I don't think anybody saw that coming. The Jets are finally learning how to use a tight end, and Austin Seferian Jenkins has been that guy. And the Jets haven't used a tight end in any kind of capacity since Dustin Keller left 5 years ago. And I think part of that is that for all these years, they've had a pretty good wide receiving core where they've had people that they can rely on. And then whoever's playing quarterback doesn't need to throw to the tight end. And any of the tight ends they have don't know how to catch the ball. Now they finally have a tight end who can catch the ball, and Josh McCown is using them. So I'm happy about that part. Because I think having a good tight end that can catch the ball is key to winning. You look at the teams that have won the Super Bowl lately, especially the New England Patriots. They've had one, and in most cases, two pass-catching tight ends that absolutely wreak havoc for opposing secondaries. Because you can't put a linebacker on them because they're too slow, and you can't put a safety on them or a corner because they're not big enough to bring them down. So how do you cover them? Well, the Jets are finally getting on board with that, and I couldn't be happier. Then, McCown throws that really nice pass on third down to Jeremy Curley, where he just kind of flips it over, and he just waltzes in for a touchdown. And as happy as I was about that, part of me then realized, oh no, you left him on your bench in fantasy. Oops. Luckily for me, I'm still going to win in that league, because if I wasn't, I might have thrown something at the wall. And then the utterly predictable happened. The Jets took their foot off the gas. You can't do that against the New England Patriots. You can't do that against anybody. You did it against the Browns, and the Browns almost came out there and beat you. The Browns are not the New England Patriots. The New England Patriots will take any opportunity that you give them and make you pay. And that is exactly what they did. Patriots are driving down the field, and they wind up scoring, and then they get the ball back because they turned up their defense. They get the ball back. Tom Brady's got the ball with 3 minutes ago, and I was speaking to somebody on Twitter earlier, and he said if the Patriots are the Patriots, they're gonna hold on to the ball, score, and then score to start the second half. They didn't score that drive. They got the interception that they missed out on the previous drive. Buster Screen actually able to hold on to the ball this time. But then the Jets give it right back. And then the Patriots are the Patriots. And they go down the field and they score. They score to end the half. It's tied at 14. And all I could sit, I'm just sitting there shaking my head at the sheer lunacy of how they let that happen. You were up 14-0. You have all the momentum on your side. How are you not playing the same game that you had played for the first 25 minutes? Like, you should not have eased up on the New England Patriots. I don't care who's out there. They're still professionals. They're still the defending Super Bowl champions. And that's still Tom Brady on the other side of the field. You don't give him anything. You put it to beat him, you need to get up in his face, get pressure on him, and make him give him happy feet. Because he's proven he's got that at times. Then the Patriots get the ball to start the second half because they won the coin toss and they deferred. It's a brilliant move. I would do it too if I was a coach. And they go out and they score a touchdown. They then add on another field goal. It's 24-14. The Patriots score 24 unanswered points. And then this is where I think the game took a terrible turn. And where, if I'm the Jets, I know you can't really blame what happened on anybody, but I can definitely basically look at somebody and say, how could you miss this? The Jets are driving down the field. They're down by 10. It's in the fourth quarter. McCown rolls out, finds Austin Safarian and Jenkins. Jenkins goes out towards the sideline, gets hit by two Patriots. But he breaks the play. Touchdown. Great. Jets are going to be down 3, and their defense has started to ratchet up and had played a little bit better. But wait. Every scoring play has to go for review. And as it turns out, what the officials saw was Austin Safarian Jenkins dropped the ball, and he lose possession of it. He regained possession of it, but they claim that he did not regain possession of it in bounds and regain possession of it out of bounds, so therefore he fumbled it in the end zone, and it was a touchback, Patriots ball, no score. Really? As if anything else can't possibly go wrong. They take away the touchdown that would have put them within 3 and put the Patriots back on the ropes. How is that even acceptable? And replays even showed it, that while Safarian Jenkins did lose possession of the ball, he got possession back and put it to his chest. He did not, that ball never hit the ground. That ball was in his hands the entire way through to the end zone. And this is from Brian Costello in the New York Post. He got a statement from Tony Corrente, the head official in today's game. It says, "The final shot that we saw was from the end zone that showed the New York Jets runner. We'll call him a runner at that point. But the football started to go towards the ground. He lost the ball. It came out of his control as he was almost to the ground. Now he regrabs the ball, and by rule, now he has to complete the process of a recovery, which means he has to survive the ground again. So in recovering it, he recovered, hit the knee, started to roll, and the ball came out a second time. So the ball started to move in his hands this way. He's now out of bounds in the end zone, which now created a touchback. So he didn't survive the recovery, and didn't survive the ground during the recovery is what happened." Looking at that replay, that ball never hit the ground. That ball was firmly in his chest, did not move as he went into the end zone. That was a good touchdown, and I don't know what angle he saw, but clearly what he saw and what everybody else saw is two completely different things. And I don't want to say that dictated the end of the game for the Jets, but I think that did put a bit of a damper on what they were doing, because they had been driving down the field, they were confident, and that was the touchdown that would have put them within 3. All they would have had to do was stop the Patriots, and then since they wound up getting a field goal on the next drive, that's a tie game that didn't happen because of some arbitrary ruling. That it's almost like the what is a catch rule. He has to survive the ground. What does that even mean? He had possession of the ball when he crossed the plane. He was going down, had possession of the ball as he broke the plane of the end zone. That is a touchdown. I don't think anybody would have... It's just mind-boggling to me how that kind of fell through. And the Jets get completely hosed on that. And if I was the coach and I'm sitting there and they're explaining that, there would be steam coming out of my ears like a cartoon character, and I'd be saying every 4-letter word I know to this official. Where I would have negated the touchdown anyway, because I would have gotten so many 15-yard penalties that they would have had to throw me out of the game. Unacceptable how that get. how that got through. It's unreal how, and I don't want to say that it's a luck thing, because it just happens. But to see how often the New England Patriots get on that side of calls like that, where I'm pretty sure against anybody else, I have to believe that would have been a touchdown. I'm not intimating that the refs are in New England's pocket, because that's not true. I don't believe that. And if that were the case, the NFL would have a huge, huge problem. So I'm not intimating it. I'm not saying it's the truth, because it's not. But it's funny to me how often plays like this happen against the New England Patriots. It's just bizarre to me. But there are still some positive takeaways. The Jets are still a 500 team right now. They're still sitting at 3-3. They play Miami next week. And despite what Miami did against Atlanta today, coming back from 17-0 down to win 20-3, I don't see any reason why the Jets can't go into Miami and beat Miami for a second time this season. They already did so against Miami at MetLife Stadium, where they made Jay Cutler's life a living hell. And I don't see any reason why they couldn't do that again. And you know, after a game like today, they're going to be going into Miami mad. They are going to be angry, and they're going to make somebody suffer, as they rightfully should. Because after a game like that, you need to just take out your aggression on the next opponent you see. And unfortunately for Miami, it's them. So Miami is sitting at 3-2 now. The Jets are sitting at 3-3. New England's at 4-2. And Buffalo, who was on their bye, are sitting at 3-2. So for everybody that said that division was going to be the Patriots' coronation once again, and the Jets were going to sit at the bottom of the division, I guess everybody was wrong. Because the Patriots are only a game up on everybody, and the Jets are still hanging around. I didn't think it was going to happen at the beginning of the year. When I did an appearance on Kick Off Your Sunday, which can be heard on Sunday mornings here at WGBB, I said that I didn't think they were going to win 3 games all year. And I gladly ate crow on that one, because I'm a Jets fan. I want to see my team win. Even though I do want to see them go in a new direction and get that franchise quarterback that they need, I'm not an advocate for them tanking. I want to see my team go out there and try to win every game. Even though I know that there's not necessarily the talent there to win a lot of games. But I still want them going out there with the mindset of winning. And these are professional athletes. They don't want to tank. Some of these guys are at the end of their career, or they're especially in football, where the professional career is very short. The average lifespan of an NFL player is 3.5 years. Do you really want to spend a year of your prime earning potential on a team that's trying to lose? And the answer to that is no, because that makes you look bad, makes the organization you're playing for look bad, and when it comes time for free agency, they're going to say, oh, well, you were on the tanking team. Why didn't you put out more effort to ensure that the tanking stopped? And there's the fine line between what the Philadelphia 76ers did and what a lot of Jets fans wanted the Jets to do. The 76ers management told fans to trust the process, which essentially they've tanked for the last 4 years, and now it's starting to bear some fruit. They have two number one picks in Ben Simmons and Markelle Fultz, who are ready to play. They have Joel Embiid, who, if he can stay healthy, he's going to be one of the best centers in basketball. They now have a core that they can keep together for at least the next 4, 5, 6 years. Football, you can't do that, because there's so much more turnover. There's no guaranteed contracts, so players can get cut at the drop of a hat. And it's not the 1970s where you can keep an entire team together for as long as a team like the Dallas Cowboys did, for as long as the Pittsburgh Steelers did, or even going into the 80s and 90s. how the Bill Parcells Giants stayed together for all those years, or the first run of Bill Belichick with the New England Patriots, where he had his core for those three Super Bowl rings. Can't do that anymore. The game has changed. The personnel changes very, very rapidly. So you can't spend a year of your life on a team that's tanking, not in the NFL. And then you also have a coach in Todd Bowles who's coaching for his job. There were calls for him to get fired last year after the miserable season that the Jets had to endure. And a season like that happening this year, and Bowles is out the door. Whether you believe he should be or shouldn't be fired is another story. But please call in 631-888-8811. We want to hear what you have to say about this and about today's game. He doesn't want to get fired. He likes his job. He likes getting paid millions of dollars to coach. I would like millions of dollars to coach. You would like millions of dollars to coach. Brian, you want millions of dollars to coach. See, we all agree. We all want money. We all want to be paid very handsomely to do what we do. He doesn't want to tank, because if he does and then gets fired, no team is going to hire him again, because somebody's going to interview him and say, "You approved the tank. Why should I hire you when you didn't have the stones to stand up and play to win? We want to win. We don't want somebody who's not going to play to win every game." And that's not an attempt to sound cliche at all, because I know it is. I know it sounds cliche. And there's really no other way to put it around it. Everybody wants to win, because at the end of the day, getting paid is their top goal. But they want the hardware. They want that nice ring. The team wants that Lombardi trophy sitting in their office. The fans want that Lombardi trophy that they can walk by and say, "Hey, I remember when that happened." And right now, Jets fans can't do that, because unless you're in your 60s or 70s, you didn't see it happen. Because it's been 50 years since the Jets won a Super Bowl. 50 years. They were already on a 23-year drought by the time I was born. And it feels like forever since then for me, as I've been rooting for the Jets for 20 years. So I'm ready for a Super Bowl championship. Will I see it in my lifetime? God, I hope so. We got about another 10 minutes to play with here. We're gonna take a look and see what the Giants are doing now. Last we checked, they were up by the score of 10-0, and I didn't expect that. I'm sure the Broncos didn't expect that. So I would have to believe that they've ratcheted up their defense. They tightened up and started to play a little bit better. And we're going to get this score right now. Oh, I guess I was wrong. The Broncos are down 17-3 with 48 seconds to go in the second quarter. And the Giants are, I'm guessing, playing like the team everybody expected them to, and getting production from everybody they were looking for. Even their defense is starting to play very well. They get a pick six from Janoris Jenkins, and they're really frustrating Trevor Siemian. He's 11 of 23 for 148 yards and two picks, including that pick six by Janoris Jenkins. Eli Manning hasn't really had to do all that much. He's 7 of 12 for 74 yards and a touchdown. The Giants are actually getting some running game. Orlon Zarqua has 63 rushing yards. I didn't think they were going to get 63 rushing yards for the next 6 weeks. Their running game has been non-existent and just absolutely... They're not making any plays with the running game. So when you know that you have to pass the ball, teams can work with that. And they can drop back in coverage because they know you can't run the ball. So now today, the Giants are averaging 6 yards carry, which is more than they've done all year. Because Dark was averaging 8. Gallman's averaging 3.5. Vereen has 1 carry. And maybe maybe the stats are skewed because Darkwood did have a 47-yard run. So you have to take that into consideration, because other than that, he's averaging 2 yards a carry from there. So what one carry really is inflating it, but that one carry makes the other team have to respect what you're doing. Because now they've proven that they could break it off once. What's stopping them from breaking it off again? And what do I expect them to do it? No, I don't. I expect the Broncos to contain the run for the rest of the game and force Eli Manning to throw the ball. And they've proven they can get to Eli Manning because he's already been sacked twice. But Eli Manning is a pro's pro. He gets rid of the ball quickly most of the time and makes the plays that he needs to. I'll take a quick look at some of the other scores from around the league. We already spoke about the Miami Dolphins coming back from a 17-point deficit to beat the Atlanta Falcons 20-17. We're going to take a look at the other winless team here in the NFL. The Giants aren't alone. Still got the Cleveland Browns. And the Cleveland Browns have been rebuilding for, since 1999. They haven't been able to get back to where they were when they were the original Cleveland Browns before they moved to Baltimore. A gazillion quarterbacks, a few hundred head coaches and coordinators, ownership changes, and meanwhile, that dog pound keeps barking. But they went into Houston today, and they faced Deshaun Watson, which is basically like the Browns looking into what they could have had. And instead, they chose to draft Deshaun Kizer in the second round when they could have had Deshaun Watson in the first, because they had the draft picks to do it. And they decided to go in a different direction, and they let Deshaun Watson fall to Houston. Houston got the quarterback that they need, and they're looking very strong right now. And what did Deshaun Watson do against this Cleveland team? 17-29, 225 yards, 3 touchdowns. Hey, Cleveland, still want Kizer? Kizer didn't even play. Kizer is benched for Kevin Hogan. And if you're wondering who Kevin Hogan is, I think Kevin Hogan might be wondering who Kevin Hogan is. He played at Stanford. This is his second year in the league. And when you're a Browns quarterback, I think at a certain point you just know that your career is pretty much ruined. Because you're playing on a bad team with a bad offensive line with no wide receivers and no future. That team goes through changes more often than the Raiders did under Al Davis in the end. And it's incomprehensible to me that the Browns can stay this dysfunctional for as long as they have. And if you're a Browns fan, how do you stick with it? I know it's your team, and I know you stick through everything with the good and the bad. But at a certain point, when is enough enough? And at a certain point, you have to expect results and expect some kind of return on your investment. Because you sit there and you pay thousands of dollars for season tickets, and I can go on StubHub right now for their next home game, and I could probably buy a ticket for $8. Not that I'm going to Cleveland to do that. I have plenty of other things I would do in Cleveland first. Sorry, Browns fans, but it's true. When you're shelling out all this money, at a certain point you expect something back. You expect a winning season here and there. You can't expect to go to the Super Bowl every year, but hell, just 9 wins? Is that asking too much from the Browns? And then you have to sit back and remember, oh, right, we're talking about the Browns, and yeah, that is kind of a lot to ask for. Because I don't think they've won 9 games in 4 years. And I mean that combined. Just a sad situation for Hugh Jackson, where he goes 1-15 last year, he starts 0-6 this year, and that misery just does not seem to end. Because on top of all that, you have the Pittsburgh Steelers in that division take out the big bad Kansas City Chiefs. They go to Arrowhead Stadium and they make the Chiefs' life miserable. And the Steelers have that ability to do that, where they can really make the Chiefs suffer and struggle, and the 72 Dolphins can clink their glasses once again because nobody's going to be undefeated. Well, we got a couple minutes left to play with here. I just want to take time out to thank Brian Graves for running the booth, making everything sound good. Thank all of you for listening. Thank the officials in the Jets-Patriots game for giving me a ton of material to use today, because, let's face it, you guys, not the real MVP, but you guys just never need to show up at MetLife Stadium again, because that was indefensible. And, of course, like I said at the top of the show, I need to thank the Arizona State Sun Devils for making this Sun Devil one happy guy, taking out Washington. Can't go wrong with that. That was just a great morning here in New York. And finally at 2:45, was able to finally crash down from that. That's going to do it for tonight's show. You'll hear me again next month. You're not going to want to miss that. We'll have some good guests for you. And hopefully we get some calls in next time. So for Brian Graves, I'm Andy Sukoff. You all have a good night and go Giants.
Did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.